I'd like for you to open your Bible today to 1 Kings chapter number 14 and warn you that we're now going to be bouncing back and forth between the Kings and the Chronicles quite often. And you'll hear me hesitate from time to time and have to decide which place I want to go. I'll be looking at my chronological companion notes to see where we need to go next. Because when you write a history, you have to decide, am I going to just tell the story of this one particular person from beginning to end, or this one particular country from beginning to end, and then go back when I'm talking about another king from beginning to end, go back over some of the interaction between these two kings. Do you do it that way? Or do you do some sort of harmonization where you try to keep things in sequence of where they happened? Now, I prefer that second way of doing things. I like things in a nice chronological order. And that's why I did all the work on my chronological companion through the years to help me picture everything in the scripture that way. But because the Bible is written the other way, where it deals with the entire kingdom in its entirety, the entire kingdom of one particular king in its entirety, it means that we do have to do a lot of bouncing. All right, so there's my fair warning to you that you'll need to have two books open most of the time if you want to follow along. So we know that the kingdom split into northern Israel and southern Judah back in 941 BC. We know that in 936, 5 years later, in the spring, it would appear that Shishak, the Pharaoh of Egypt, taking advantage of this recent split, invades Judah, almost takes Jerusalem. The only reason he's not allowed to is because Rehoboam repented and God had mercy on the kingdom of Judah and kept Shishak from taking the capital city at that time. And so things kind of settle down at that point in the 930s and into the beginning of the 920s, it would appear, where both kingdoms, northern Israel, southern Judah, are just following the lead of their kings. The southern king, Rehoboam, he's got issues, but it seems that the Shishak invasion scare kind of scared him straight a little bit. But the northern king, Jeroboam, he's continuing down this path of having an illegitimate religion. And so that's going to be at the heart of what happens in his kingdom toward the end of his time on the throne. So I can't place an exact date on this, but I'm guessing it's probably in the 920s BC, the early 920s BC, because he dies in the later 920s BC. All right, so here we go. Chapter 14 of 1 Kings. At that time, meaning during the kingdom of Jeroboam, the son of Jeroboam fell sick. His name is Abiah. Now, Abiah means Yah is my father, which I actually don't think that should surprise us too much because this boy was probably born back at the beginning of Jeroboam's marriage, and his life was more devoted to the true and living God, although he still is kind of presenting his golden calves as being he who is, or Yahweh. But anyway, at that time, Abiah the son of Jeroboam fell sick. Jeroboam said to his wife, "Arise, disguise yourself, that it may not be known that you're the wife of Jeroboam, and go to Shiloh. Now, Shiloh is a few miles north, I think maybe 10 or 11 miles north of Shechem, where he's, or excuse me, south of where Shechem is. It used to be the place where the tabernacle was. But there is a prophet there that has had contact with Jeroboam in the past. He's the guy that told Jeroboam he would become the king of the northern tribes of Israel. So Jeroboam continues giving instructions to his wife. You go to Shiloh, behold, Ahijah, the prophet, is there, who said to me that I should be king over this people. Take with you 10 loaves, some cakes, and a jar of honey, and go to him. So I want you to disguise yourself, take an offering that you would give to a prophet in order for the prophet to tell you something from God, and then go and find out what's going to happen to our boy. He will tell you what shall happen to the child. Now, how old is this child? Again, we don't know. The word that is used here has the sense of at least an adolescent or older. So Jeroboam's wife did so. She arose and went to Shiloh, came to the house of Ahijah. Now, Ahijah could not see, for his eyes were dim because of his age. So some time has passed. He is no longer traveling around like he did earlier. Probably has cataracts of some sort, sounds like. So he's just hanging around his own house and doing the Lord's business. So he who has said to Ahijah, behold, the wife of Jeroboam is coming to inquire of you concerning her son, for he's sick. So the queen is showing up. She's going to come surreptitiously, covertly, but I want you to know it's her. Thus and thus shall you say to her. Now we'll find out what that message is in a bit. So when she came, she pretended to be another woman. But when Ahijah heard the sound of her feet as she came at the door, he said, come in, wife of Jeroboam. Why do you pretend to be another? Which, no doubt, that grabbed a hold of her real quick, that she could not hide her identity even from a blind prophet. For I am charged with unbearable news for you. So, hard, difficult already. She should have known this is not going to go well because of that one word right there. Verse 7. Go, tell Jeroboam this. Thus says he who is the God of Israel. Because I exalted you from among the people and made you leader over my people Israel, and tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you, and yet you have not been like my servant David, who kept my commandments and followed me with all my heart, all his heart, doing only that which was right in my eyes. Now, this is a long sentence, so we're going to break into it. You remember back when Ahijah first came and had his conversation with Jeroboam. Jeroboam was told, if you will just keep the covenant with the true and living God, if you will walk in his ways, if you will be faithful, then your dynasty will endure. So it's conditional. But if you don't, you're going to lose it. Your family's going to lose it because I will have to judge you. Well, this is where the conditionality is kicking in. So the prophet says, from God to Jeroboam through his wife, because you didn't pay attention to my instructions, because you did not keep the covenant like I told you to do. Verse 9, but you have done evil above all who were before you, and have gone and made for yourselves other gods and metal images, provoking me to anger, and have cast me behind your back. So because you have totally blown off the covenant, you have made other gods and goddesses, you have made images of things on planet Earth and in the sky above, because it's not just the golden calves. Remember, we read earlier that he's got other images that he is allowing to be made and placed and worshipped. So he has totally gone away from God as the sole God. So because you've done that, you've basically thrown me behind your back. You've basically put me in the rearview mirror. You're walking away from me, running away from me. So here comes the negative part of the covenant. Verse 10, therefore, behold, I will bring harm upon the house of Jeroboam and will cut off from Jeroboam every male, both bond and free in Israel, and will burn up the house of Jeroboam as a man burns up dung until it's gone. So if you were trying to burn up manure, either as a heat source or just as a means to get rid of it, you burn it up completely. And so he says, I'm going to burn your house down. I am going to leave you no male lines to continue your dynasty, your family. You're done. I am cutting your line off. And then he gives this very specific prophecy. Anyone belonging to Jeroboam who dies in the city, the dogs shall eat. Now, these are not pet dogs. These are the roving mongrels, garbage-eating dogs. I always like to refer to them as. And he says, if somebody from your family dies from here on out, nobody's going to care for them. They're going to get munched on by the garbage dogs. And then everyone in your family who dies in the open country, that is out in the country, outside of the walls, the birds of the heavens are going to eat. So basically, people are not going to like you or your family members. They're not going to care about you. They're not going to want to put you in the tomb. Anybody from your family. So they're just going to let you be animal food, scavenger food. For he who is has spoken it. And then the prophet continues, arise therefore, you go back to your house. When your feet enter the city, enter the house, the child shall die. Now remember, he's speaking this to the mom. And even though she isn't, I think, a pretty evil person as well, she's probably got feelings for her child. And this is going to be hard on her to hear this. All Israel shall mourn for him and bury him, for he only of Jeroboam shall come to the grave, because in him there is found something pleasing to he who is the God of Israel in the house of Jeroboam. So even though we don't know who this child is, we don't know his name, nothing. Well, we know his name, Abiya, but other than that, we don't know anything else about him, how old he is. All we know is he apparently was a good person. But he's the last good person in this family. And so that's why this family is going to be erased. So he'll get a nice funeral. He's the last one to get that. Verse number 14. Moreover, he who is will raise up for himself a king over Israel who shall cut off the house of Jeroboam today, not as in literally today, but in this time period. And henceforth, he who is will strike Israel as a reed is shaken in the water. And so nice word picture if you've ever, you know, been at a pond or a lake or a stream and the reeds are getting hit by the heavy winds. I mean, they're just rocking back and forth and shaking the water. That's pretty violent action. And so that's what he's saying, is God is going to take Israel down violently and root up Israel out of this good land that he gave to their fathers and scattered them beyond the Euphrates. This is the first prediction of the Assyrian exile for the northern tribes of Israel. That will start happening in, well, actually it'll happen before this, but the northern tribes will be destroyed as a kingdom in 723 BC. So here we are basically 200 years previous to that. So this is the first prediction that northern Israel is going to cease to exist. And the people at that time will end up being exiled, relocated north of the Euphrates River. And that is exactly what happens, by the way. And why is it? Because they have made their Asherim, Asherah is the female goddess of the pantheon of the Middle East at this time. She's the fertility goddess. She is the goddess of grain. She's the goddess of love. She's the goddess of the sky. She's the queen of heaven, all of those sorts of things. And so the way that they worshipped her typically was to have some sort of wooden pole, totem, tree that represented her. And this was called an Asherah pole, or and when you have a plural of it, it's Asherim. So they've been making their little totem poles all over northern Israel to this mother goddess figure, provoking he who is to anger. And so this is the reason why, is because they're just descending rapidly into paganism. Verse 16, and he will give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he sinned and made Israel to sin. Now, when we see that a lot in the future, it will be specifically talking about the golden calves, but that is just a representation of this adoption of idolatry and false faith all over northern Israel. So bad news all the way around because of the sin. Verse 17, then Jeroboam's wife arose and departed and came to Tirzah. Now this is interesting because originally Jeroboam set up his reign at Shechem, but now he seems to have built a palace at Tirzah, a little bit to the north and a little bit to the east of Shechem. Why he did that, we don't know. But she comes back to that palace, and as she came to the threshold of the house, the child died. So just like the prophet said, it happened. And all Israel buried him and mourned for him according to the word of he who is, which he spoke by the servant, his servant Ahijah, the prophet. So that's the end then of the last good person in the Jeroboam line. I want you to turn to 1 Kings 14:29 now. Sometimes we'll bounce around in the same book. Actually, you know what? I'm going to change my mind on that. I want to go to 2 Chronicles instead. 2 Chronicles 12:13, which is parallel in some of the information here. But I want to bring some additional information in at this point from Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 12:13. So Rehoboam grew strong in Jerusalem and reigned. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 17 years in Jerusalem. So that makes him 58 years old when he dies, right? The city that he who is had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. His mother's name was Naamah the Ammonite. So one of the wives of King Solomon, one of his pagan wives, apparently. So he probably got this dual religious training as he was growing up, and that may have contributed to some of his bad choices. Verse number 14 has an overview of his morality. He did evil, for he did not set his heart to seek he who is. And we read about that. He was abandoning God in his fourth year, the fifth year. We end up with the invasion from Egypt. There's some repentance. There is some sparing of Jerusalem at that time. And we speculate that Rehoboam kind of toned it down with the paganism at that time. But his heart apparently never was fully engaged with the true and living God. And so he lives and then dies. And his death comes in, I believe, 924 B.C. Verse 15, "Now the acts of Rehoboam, from first to last, are they not written in the chronicles of Shemaiah the prophet," which we've met him before, "and of Iddo the seer?" There were continual wars between Rehoboam and Jeroboam, so there were border skirmishes between them. And then Rehoboam slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, and Abiya, his son, reigned in his place. Now, over in the Kings passage, we are told that the new king was named Abiyam. So we have a little variation in spelling. Abiya, as we already mentioned, means "my father is Yah." Abiyam means "my father is the sea." And Yam was actually the god of the sea. And so there may be some sort of weird paganism going on here with a secondary name when Rehoboam was doing some of his idol worship. Don't know that for sure, but there is a variation between the names of the next king. All right, so let's talk about this next king. Let's go ahead and go to the 1 Kings 15 one now. 1 Kings 15 1. Now, in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, and so that's how we know that it's 924 BC, I believe, the son of Nebat, Abiyam, or Abiyah, began to reign over Judah. Now, he reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. That automatically tells you that he dies earlier, because his dad was only 58 when he died, and so this guy's got to be a lot younger than his dad. So 3 years probably means God takes him out. His mother's name was Ma'akah, the daughter of Abishalom. And he walked in all the sins that his father did before him, and his heart was not wholly true to he who is his God as the heart of David his father. Nevertheless, for David's sake, he who is his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem, setting up his son after him and establishing Jerusalem, because David did what was right in the eyes of he who is and did not turn aside from anything he commanded him except in the days of his life, except for the matter of Uriah the prophet. So we find out that this Abiya or Abiyam is not fully on board with the worship of the true and living God. He's got issues. But God is maintaining this line out of fulfillment of prophecies made to David, promises made to David. So this line has to endure. It can't just disappear. So God gets it through some of these bad generations in order to get to the end of the story later. Now, we're told at this point in the Kings passage that there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. But it wasn't just between Rehoboam and Jeroboam. It was also between Abijam or Abijah and Jeroboam. This is where we turn our attention now to the 2 Chronicles passage. 2 Chronicles 13, 2. Let's go ahead and start at verse 13, or chapter 13, verse 1. In the 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abijah began to reign over Judah. He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah, which is a variation from what we just read in 1 Kings. So you've heard me tell you before, names and numbers are two of the hardest things to hand copy and not make mistakes from time to time. So we're not 100% certain what his mom's name or grandma or grandpa's name was. But look at this. Now, there was war between Abijah and Jeroboam. As soon as Abijah comes to the throne, he decides, I think we need to get part of our country back. Now, in his mind, all of northern Israel should belong to the Davidic kingdom. God had warned Rehoboam, don't try to take it back. But Abijah, now that he's king, thinks, I think we should attack them. I think we should try to get some of that property back. And so he does. And so let's set the stage for our next time that we get together where it says this. Verse 3, Abijah went out to battle, having an army of valiant men of war, 400,000 chosen men. And Jeroboam drew up his line of battle against him with 800,000 chosen mighty warriors. That's a lot of people face to face over the fate of where the border is going to be between these two countries. Mark your place. We'll get back there next time we're into the Word.